Hey guys, welcome to the Pack Animal Podcast, where we perceive life through the eyes of a canine. I'm your host, animal behavior specialist, David Curlander. Today we have on a returning guest, Steve Snell, owner of GundogSupply.com and an avid upland hunter and waterfowl hunter, to discuss the pros and cons of e-collar or electronic remote collars. So welcome back, Steve.
Howdy.
Doing good. Can't stand this snow. I mean, we got like, 4 inches of snow here in Tennessee. I'm like, this is...
We try not to do that here.
No, it's crazy. Dogs are loving it though. But, I wanted to first start by talking about breaking the negative stigma behind e-collars. You know, I mean, it's such a useful device. They're actually illegal in some countries. That's a little extreme to kind of take someone's choice away like that to utilize a device. But, it's behind my experience. I know that the e-collar has, a variable amount of usage. And, again, it depends on the person, depends on how they're using it. But tell me your experience with these guys.
So usually if I run into somebody I think there's a segment of the market out there that's going to be opposed to the product no matter what, just because they don't like the idea of something. They don't believe the concept that you should use negative stimulation ever. And these are the same folks that aren't interested in corporal punishment or discipline. They think that everything should be done, a certain way. And there's a small segment of the market, they're going to be that way, and I don't spend a lot of time worrying about them. Because no matter what I say, they're not going to take it the right way. And then there's those of us that are in a small group that no matter what you say, we're going to defend it. And, we can't be, we're just too ingrained into it. And it's such a valuable tool to us that we're going to defend it no matter what. Right. And then you have a very large chunk of people in the middle that they're open to either way, depending on, how it's presented to them. Generally, if I find somebody that is either opposed to it or hesitant to it, it's usually a lack of understanding of what the product is and how we use it and what it can and can't do.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things where it really just depends on what your exposure is, to it and what you're going to do with it. And so we try to do a lot of education-based training. We try to let people understand this is what the product is, this is what you can do with it, this is why it's better than a lot of the other tools that are out there and how you can do things with this tool that you can't do any other way. And it allows a certain amount of consistency and freedom for the dog. And it's the ability to be very fair to the dog.
Yeah.
And so, if you go about it in the right way, it's possibly the best, the best thing that's ever been done for dogs.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Part of the problem is that it has a dark past is the right way to phrase it. But, the stuff that I remember clearly, the first collar that my dad got, and it was late 70s, early 80s, which they've been around since probably the 50s in some form or another. But the first collar that we had was a Tritronix. I believe it was either A170 or A190. I can't remember which, but it was the gold tube with the long antenna. Mm. And I was not allowed to touch it. It was one of those things that it was very expensive and it was very, how you used it was at that time. It didn't have a lot of subtleties to it.
Right.
It was a pretty, and you had to be very careful. And we used it for stopping unwanted behavior, primarily stopping bird dogs from chasing deer.
Right.
And so that's how I got introduced to it. And then around 2000 is when I saw somebody. Actually, it was Rick Smith. I was at a seminar with Rick Smith, and at that time they were using Inatech collars, which is an older company that got bought out by Radio Systems Sport Dog. But Inatech was one of the first companies that had variable intensity that you could control at the transmitter, and it was fascinating to watch. To be able to quickly teach a dog what a stimulation meant and get him to perform, almost instantly, and to the point that I watched Rick do something with a dog of mine. And, anytime you see somebody do something with a dog, there's always that, this dog's been trained and you're looking at a trained dog performing. It was my dog. I knew what the limitations on that dog were. I knew what that dog had been trained to do and not. And I was able to see him in a period of about 5 minutes teach this dog to stand still while birds were flying all around her. And, you know, and it changed my world, you know, completely. So, you know, so I'm 20 years into it now.
Yeah, that's, I remember those collars. I had one of those Upland Pro, the tube looking ones. They were,
oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I forget exactly the model, but boy, that thing, you know, I mm-hmm. it took a lot of finesse to get that thing to be, you know, to work. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. So it's reasonable that people would have that mentality, you know, from the history of it and all that stuff. And, you know, but you're right. There's a lot of ignorance out there. I don't want to call people ignorant. It's not, you know, I'm not saying that, but just lack of knowledge. Yeah. Of how they work. Yeah. Because, you know,
I explain it like this. Think about it as a hammer. Okay. All right. So a hammer is a tool. Okay. And I can take this hammer and I can build anything. You know, I can take my wood and my raw materials and my nails, and I can build you a beautiful structure using this hammer. I can also take that hammer and I can smack you upside the head with it.
Right.
Now, the hammer's not to blame.
Right.
I didn't change anything about the hammer. I just used the hammer incorrectly.
Right.
And that to me is that's what this is. This is a tool, and how you go about using that tool, you have to be educated on how to use that tool. There are right and wrong ways to use that tool. And you can, you know, just like a lot of other tools, if you use it, you know, if your intent is to use it incorrectly or to use it with harm, then, you know, that's what you get.
Right.
And
yeah.
That is not what, that's not what this product is.
Absolutely. I use that similar example with a leash. You know, you could, you could tether the dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dog. You could either use that leash to build bad habits, or you could use that leash to correct bad habits, or you could whip them with it. I mean, it's really up to the person. I mean, obviously, I would never suggest anybody whip their dog with their leash, but you know, you're right. It's one of those things where you can, you know, I know there are certain devices. I know you know that I'm kind of against prong collars. You know, I'm not, you know, yeah. I see some people use them. They, I mean, you will yield results, of course, you know, but I don't feel like the mentality is where it needs to be in like the healthy development of a relationship, you know? And people always ask me like, how can you be against prong collars and not against e-collars? And I'm like, well, the e-collar technologies today, like the technology behind these e-collars, Garmin, Sport Dog, e-collar technologies, just all of them. Well, the nicer ones. I've seen some real cheap junk ones on Amazon, but the technology is just so improved that you could literally just reach out over a half a mile and tap your dog on the shoulder. You know, very encouraging. You know, it's
I think it's one of those things that people need to understand what the low level stimulations feel like and what you can teach.
Right.
We were having a conversation online the other day about using tone and using vibration. And, you know, I originally got into using low level stim with a dog of mine that was named Babe. She was a Brittany. Around, I still hunted her up into 11, 12.
Wow.
But around that time, she lost her hearing.
Wow.
And she was deaf as a post, but was in still pretty good shape. But it was, you know, it was a problem. Couldn't communicate with her easily. And so, you know, we did a couple of just a real quick, you know, teaching her low-level stems meant, you know, look at me. And then we, you know, we taught her some simple hand signals. And she was able to hunt, you know, for a couple of seasons longer, you know, after losing her hearing.
Wow, yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of different things you can do with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I always start my clients on any of my own dogs on low level stimulation as a positive thing. I'll put the collar on and I'll run backwards and say, come and hit that button repeatedly. And they're just like happy and they come over. Yeah. So when they feel it, they understand that it's associated to me. It's not the collar. It's me.
Yeah.
And that all I'm doing is just reaching out and touching them. It gives you such an advantage. Definitely. I remember back in the day, I mean, like, God, 25 years ago, 28 years ago, trying to work a dog on a lunge line out in the field.
Sure. It's hard to do.
Very, very hard to do. And your dog
winds up. It requires a high level of coordination that most people don't have.
It does. And a very groomed environment. It's crazy. But another thing the e-collar takes away from is, you know, and I do use Martingale collars. I love them. Even distribution of pressure, very natural. You know, but when you pop that, you are putting a certain residual back force on them. It's almost like a whiplashing effect. So if the dog lunges forward and it pulls on that, now I'm not saying that you're going to risk the dog. The dog's neck is the strongest part of its body. But with the e-collar, you could give a very effortless, non-painful correction without that backlash. That, you know, so essentially after the correction with the e-collar, the dog is left with a choice. You know, so that's how the dog can learn so fast, is that the dog is actually left with a choice. Should I fail again or should I listen? On a leash, he doesn't have that choice. Basically, he fails, you tether him, and then you have to recreate the scenario. So, you know, I love my e-collars, and that's why I really wanted to get you on and talk about this because I get heat for it all the time out training. You know, I get somebody walk by and they're like,
You know, and here's another big part of it. I think people miss out on this. You know, a lot of it depends on what kind of dogs you have. And by that, I don't mean breed, but I mean drive. Mm. And it's very difficult to compare. I had my wife had a couple of labs when we first got married, and they weren't litter mates, but they shared some lineage. One of them, he was a good dog. He was a decent retriever, and he was an overall, you know, a decent, waterfowl dog. And then we ended up with, it was a half sibling, that we got because we liked this one, and we got, you know, and we got him as an older dog. And unfortunately I probably didn't look into him as closely as I should. And his name was Ned. And, Ned was best at holding the couch down. That was Ned's best skill. And he was also kind of like a middle manager. He would wait. We had a little pond outside at the house, and you would do a retrieve, and the other dog's name was Kojak, and you would do a retrieve, and Kojak would go out and get the dummy, and he would bring it back. And just as he got to the edge of the water, Ned would go in and take it away from him and bring it to me. And so, you know, it was one of those things. We were just playing. Ned figured out that he didn't have to do all the hard work, but he could get the reward at the end. but all that to say that some dogs, I think a lack of understanding of some of these tools comes from the fact that most people, their experience with dogs is that they have a lot of experience with dogs that have low prey drive or low, you know, whatever drive you're training, whatever, you know, whether or not it's working dogs or, herding dogs or hunting dogs. You know, there's a big difference between a dog that has zero prey drive and one that has so much prey drive that it's hard for them to turn it off.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, it's a different game, and a lot of people don't grasp that.
Yeah.
And so it's very difficult to say that, you know, well, you just can't say all dogs are like this or all dogs are like that. It's just, you know, there's a lot of variation in there.
It's true. And, personality-wise as well. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And so how you go about training them, you know, it plays a role. And so I don't get real stuck on, you know, everybody has to do it this way or has to do it that way.
Right.
I will say I've never found a dog that I couldn't, you know, if using the right remote training collar, I've never found a dog that I couldn't, you know, find a stim level that they understood and were able to comply to and that they were comfortable with.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that it is a universal product. How much, you know, a dog needs, it depends on the dog.
Right.
And depends on what you're doing with them. You know, I've got dogs that, you know, that are very commonly, you know, my bird dogs out in the prairie, I want them, you know, 400 to 500 yards away from me is a pretty normal working distance. And, you know, and a lot of times they're too far away for me to communicate, you know, verbally or with a whistle. And so I need, you know, a way to do that. And so that's a little different ball game than a dog that never leaves the backyard or is never off leash.
Right.
And so, you know, so we're talking about something different here.
Right. No, it's true.
But what's cool about it is that I can take my dogs off leash.
Right.
And I can take them anywhere that I want to, and they're safe and they know what's going on and I can communicate with them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and a good example of the difference between the personalities, my American Bulldog, Riley, he actually passed not too long ago, the best bulldog I've ever had. He on the e-collar, I couldn't go above five on the e-collar technologies one, which is like the mildest one. He couldn't go above five. That dog would listen to five no matter what. My Labrador, Ausgier, when I got, I think I introduced him to that e-collar. I started conditioning him when he was about 3 months old. He was on 100 and like nothing. Like he was like, he would just look at me and just like continue doing his thing. Like it was, took a while, but now he's like one of the best duck dogs I've got, you know? I mean, steady marks beautifully, retrieves, like dog is amazing. And so it's really one of those things where it's wildly dependent on, you know, not only, like you said, it's not a breed thing, it's a personality thing and the type of training, sure. You know? So,
well, and it's a physical makeup thing too. I think that's something that a lot of folks don't understand.
True.
And that, you know, we're all electrical beings and how right. we respond to electricity a lot depends on how we're, you know, it depends on how we're made up. And, I find that some people are more sensitive to it than others.
Right.
You know, where I'm kind of like middle ground. I think we were talking about sport dog collars earlier, and I've got a video on my Facebook page of me going through, it's probably an A25X, I guess. Yeah. And, you know, it's me going through all the stim levels on my hand, you know, and those high levels are unpleasant, you know, but I can do it.
Yeah.
Now I know some folks that can sit there and take it and it doesn't even faze them at all. And then I know some folks that you get above a one or a two and they're just like, oh, you know, and some dogs are that way.
Right.
You know, I've had dogs in the past that, you know, that they were very mild and very easygoing, even tempered kind of dogs and stimulation just didn't faze them.
Yeah.
You know, and you had to really crank it up to get their attention. And then I've had dogs that were tough as nails and, you know, they could just take it. I'm talking about go all day, nothing phases them, bird dogs. And, you know, and they work off of ones and twos.
Yeah.
You know, and they just, you know, they just don't require a lot. So,
yeah.
So that's where the variable intensity comes in because so much of it depends on what the dog's doing and what their prey drive is and what they're focused on at the time. And, you know, we talked about tapping on the shoulder. I think that's a big deal. You know, dogs become very focused animals especially when the prey drive kicks in.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, and when they're, and distance even enhances that, you know, if the dog's 400 yards away from you, you know, he's not thinking about you as much as he would if he's at heel.
Right.
And so, you know, so it may require a little different, you know, a little different level. So you kind of got to gauge it, you know, with what's going on and you got to know your dog.
Right.
And there's some techniques to that to figure out, okay, this is the stim level that this dog needs. And people need to understand that they're not all the same.
Right.
And they need to understand too that not all e-collars are the same.
Right.
You know, there's not a universal numbering system. You know, your e-collar technology, you know, five is going to be different when I talk about a five on a Pro 550 Plus.
Right.
It's a different level. So
yeah.
There's a lot of knowledge that you have to have, you know, on a particular product.
Absolutely. And the stimulations are different. So I know back in the day, it was just a high intensity discharge, you know, and now it's almost like TENS machines, you know, the muscle stimulation that you would go to at a chiropractor. So, yeah. So,
and if you look at it, we do a lot of video work and, we started, you'll see some video stuff that we do. We work with, Robin Farland and Robin does a lot of stim. And we started trying to shoot video and to show people, you know, when you're stimming a dog. And the simplest thing for us to do was that we took a collar and we paired it with her collar. So she's got a transmitter and the dog is wearing a collar. And then we paired another collar, you know, to that collar. So when she presses the button, you can do this on certain brands where you can press the button and both collars are being stimmed at the same time. And you can do some cool stuff with that when you're moving points of contact around, but as a general rule, it's not something that we wouldn't put it on separate dogs.
Right.
But what we did was we take that collar and we hook it up to one of the cameras that we're shooting with, and the electrical stimulation actually generates a wave file an audio file, but you can see the waves. And it's always been fascinating to me to watch the difference in the stimulation, and you can see it on an audio file.
Wow.
Where certain collars are flatter or the wave that the stem generates, it's sharper. Mm-hmm. And then you can take that stem and you can feel it yourself. And some of them have more of a dull feel to them, and some of them have a sharper feel to them.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's all different. And, you know, I wrote an article that was talking about how it'd be nice if they were universal, but you got to understand that these are different manufactured products by different companies, and the engineers have to make them a little different.
Right.
But, you know, the other side of that is that people like them differently. You know, some people say, well, I like the stimulation on this versus that. Well, that's because they've felt it.
Right.
You know, and they know what it feels like.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's I actually train a lot with an ET300, you know, an e-collar mini.
Okay.
And then when I'm in the field, I won't go out in that field without a Garmin. You know, I feel sure. like when they're working, you know, it's mm-hmm. if they're on point, you know, and or if they're not holding point, and I need to get them back. You know, like you said, if they catch a deer trail or something and they just start sure. breaking, you know, then I need something that's going to be a little bit sharper.
Yeah. What Garmin are you using in the field?
Alpha 100.
We talked about alphas earlier. You use, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And see, that's a really cool, and the combination of GPS tracking with remote training collars, you know, and that's the last 10 or 12 years, I guess. Well, 2007 was the first GPS tracking that I saw for dogs. And then
yeah.
I think 2010 is when the Alpha 100 came out.
Yeah.
And, Sport Dog had a Tech 1 that came out. 2009, 2010, somewhere in that neighborhood that had both.
Yeah.
And so that to me is kind of the future. I run an Alpha 200, and I run a 550 plus, which is the tube style Garmin transmitter, but it has the GPS built into it. And I've gotten to where I have a hard time shifting back to anything else, because having the GPS tracking in there is just so cool.
Yeah, so I know.
It kind of ruins me for
it. Yeah, I mean, I love the fact that it tracks my dog's activity. It tells me how many times they've pointed, how long they've pointed. You know, it's yep. it's got a great, great training system to it. You know, and I know, like in the episode that we did back in the day about the GPS collars, like you know, it's so important. People, you know, it gives you so much more information. It's not just for dogs that run away. I mean, that's you know. Sure. Hopefully when you bring a dog out, it's not going to run away, you know? Totally. But you know, some of these collars, you can geofence with them. So, it's an amazing technology. And the GPS, I remember you said last time that you wouldn't even go hunting with somebody if they didn't have a GPS on them.
Yeah. You know, I was, it's too easy to do, you know, and I can't be around somebody if they lose, you know, losing dogs is just, it's just not worth it.
Right. Definitely. And if your dog gets bit by a snake or something like that, you got to be able to find your dog.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
The number of opportunities for hunting dogs, especially to get hurt in the field is pretty great. And being able to get to them and to locate them, that's a big deal.
It's true. Yeah. I know with my Brock DuBourbonnais pointer, you know, I try to keep him real close, especially.
Fancy.
Yeah. He's my boy. I've got a female coming out of Czech Republic in next week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she's beautiful. She's a perfect genetic match for my guy.
Oh.
And such a beautiful puppy. But yeah, my Kuno, my pointer, I got to work him close depending on the terrain. I was out with Nick Adair. He has a Gun Dog It Yourself podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were out the other day on a quail preserve, and it was so thick and so rough that, you know, you've got to keep your dogs close. I had my Bracco Italiano with me as well, and that dog is actually, he was with me that day. We were working the Brock DuBourbonnais the other day. I'm trying to remember which dogs I'm working and where. But yeah, you got to keep them close, because when they're locked up and they're pointing, you can't see them, you know? And you know, that's why I do run one of those screecher collars on the one that sounds like an eagle.
Okay.
It's like an old Tritronics one. I do run that, but boy, is that annoying. I have to say.
Yeah, not a fan.
No.
Not a fan. We did those for a long time. I'm not going back.
No.
I would love, we actually have a lot of requests for those, and we currently don't have a GPS system on the market by anybody that will do, you know, a beeper, you know, collar. And there's some folks that really would like to have them in certain situations, especially the grouse guys.
Yeah.
You know, they're dealing with such thick cover that they would like to have that. We currently don't, and haven't been able to convince a manufacturer that the amount of time and effort and engineering that it will take to, you know, even Garmin, you know, Garmin has a beeper collar that they sell, but it doesn't work with the Alpha system. And we haven't quite worked that out yet. I'm still working on that.
Just got to kind of run two separate collars.
Yeah, and it's hard for folks that don't do it. You know, we deal with a lot of that. We deal with a lot of engineers that don't exactly understand what we're doing. Right. And, you know, so it's hard for people to go, well, why would you want something that sounds like a garbage truck backing up, you know, when you can have GPS? And the main reason is that, you know, you're dealing with stuff where you're in proximity to them. That GPS at, you know, 10 yards, 5 yards, you know, gets a little wonky. You know, it's not really designed for that.
Right.
Where, you know, where a beeper is. And right. So, but the cover's so thick that you can't see the dog.
Right.
So it's a little different. A little different setup.
It's true. And you know, the beep actually holds the bird down. It'll you know, that noise will sometimes, you know, especially the one I have, sounds like a screaming eagle.
I'm going to say it holds some birds down.
True.
All of them.
Not all of them. No. My dog got like within 10 feet of some thick brush and woodcock were flushing like crazy. It's they don't hold for nothing. But but yeah, no, I think folks really need to, you know, definitely, you know, before making a judgment, you know, research into it and, you know, and definitely, that's because e-collars, they're so mild. Like you said, you could use anything in a negative manner. So I'm definitely going to put it out there. And I have seen trainers that will take remote trainers and just crank them, you know, and they'll just, they'll burn the dogs, you know, and that's not literally. To my listeners, they're not literally burning the dog. It's just, you know, it's just.
Yeah, that's a term that, and I think the retriever market got, you know, we use that a little bit more than we should have. And basically that's a high, you know, typically when someone does a burn, they're talking about a high level correction that is usually continuous and lasts for a while.
Right.
It's a bad word that shouldn't be used because e-collars, the electricity that comes off of an e-collar cannot actually burn anything.
Right.
It doesn't have that ability.
Right.
But. You know, it's definitely not what we're looking for.
No,
it's very difficult to train a dog. You know, you can stop a lot of unwanted behavior using high level stimulation. Right. And by that I mean, you know, chasing off game, chasing cars, dangerous stuff.
Right.
But for most of your training, it doesn't really serve a purpose.
No, you don't want to. You don't want to take your dog. Yeah, you hit using some of those high level corrections will. Break the dog out in the field, the dog won't even want to work anymore, you know, break their spirit. But definitely, I am definitely a firm believer. If my dog is running towards a highway, I'm going to hit that dog as hard as I can. Call it to get him to stop.
Well, you know, and I kind of, same thing there though. It depends on the dog. You know?
It does.
You need to understand. Yeah. You know, now, you know, if I overcorrect the dog in that situation, I'm not going to lose a lot of sleep over it.
Right.
But, you know, but it doesn't always take the highest level in a situation like that. But that comes back to knowing your dog.
Right.
You know, and knowing what your dog's going to do on a particular situation and understanding, you know, if he's chasing something, you know, and his prey drive is kicked in, it may take a higher level in that situation. If we're just working at heel and we're in a low distraction, you know, there's nothing going on, there's nothing around him, you know, sort of thing, and he's focused on the task at hand. That's a different thing.
Right. So, absolutely. Yeah. And
again,
that's
where it comes down to understand.
Yeah. And the level of training. I mean, you know, that's the thing. As long as the dog has a high level of training before you bring him into a situation where it's dangerous, you know, and the conditioning levels, you know, my dogs can take a much higher level than they're normally trained for, and they don't feel like they're heartbroken over it, you know? Another thing is if a dog's not conditioned and you hit them on high level stimulation, they're probably just going to run because they can't identify, right? What's
there.
Yeah.
What's that word? Yeah. But see, you know, but, and we do some of that, you know,
right.
But it's all about, you know, what they understand, you know, about the stimulation.
Right.
Let's talked a little bit about how stimulation, how it feels. Do you check your collars on yourself?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I do. Okay. But here's the thing, too, is dogs the dermal layer of a dog is different than a human. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have.
Okay, now where do you check? Where do you check it on yourself? Is my next question.
Inner forearm. My inner forearm.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So now I do the back of my hand.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Now I don't know which one. You know, I know a lot of folks that will do like their fingertips.
No. Yeah.
Which, you know, I generally don't recommend, mainly because you're talking about, it depends on what you're trying to do. And to me, I back up to what you said, the what a dog's neck is going to feel is different from certain parts of your body.
Right.
So if you strap it to your arm or you use your fingertips, you know, you have more nerve endings in your fingertips. You also have the sweat, you know, from your hand is going to create a different sensation.
Right.
I don't really think so the way that I feel stimulation, the way my dog feels stimulation, I don't think there's anything I could do that's going to make that the same. I like to be consistent on how I test stimulation because that way I know what stimulation feels like to me.
Right.
And so, you know, I know a lot of folks that'll like, you know, if they're, they'll do it on their, like their thigh or they'll do it on their arm. You know, I don't know if there's necessarily a good or a better for that. I do the back of my hand because, I tend to have, less nerve endings on the back of my hand.
Right. Yeah. That's, you know, I usually do the inner part of my forearm because it's the more dense muscle. So I always try to feel like, you know, the dog's neck is dense muscle.
Sure. That makes sense.
Yeah. But you're right. You know, it's what I'm feeling. I'm not judging that as what my dog feels. I'm judging that as a level of stimulation, you know, so to make that general call. So yeah, it's So that's, definitely. And there's, and the different,
I know a lot of guys. What's that?
No. You go ahead. I was going to get into something different here.
Well, so a lot of guys for me, you know, I know a lot of guys that they test their collars on themselves every time, you know, every day, first thing they do, they turn everything on and they test their stimulation on themselves before they put it on the dog.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's multiple reasons. I think number one, they want to make sure their equipment's working correctly. Which that way, you know, that way, you know, okay, I'm stimming and I'm getting my timing's right and I can feel everything. So that's a good way to go. And I think that, you know, I think that's a key part, you know, to understanding. I had a collar the other day that I took it off my dog and I looked down and one of my contact points was about 3/4 unscrewed.
Wow. Yep.
And I'm not sure. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things you kind of got to check. Those contact points are removable and they can get them done by themselves. So you got to check those, you got to check your antennas.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that if a contact point comes off, it's not going to work.
Right.
You know, can't one contact point doesn't get it done. You got to have two.
Right.
And so, you know, so there's a lot of things, but I'm always amazed back to where I asked the original question. I'm always amazed by the number of people that are very comfortable correcting their dog, but they're not very comfortable testing the stim on themselves. And I don't understand that.
Yeah.
I do not understand
that. Yeah. Well, we had a,
you know, Ed, well, you talked about TENS machines. You know, I have a TENS machine that I use on a pretty regular basis. And if you're not familiar with a TENS machine, it's basically a little unit that has these little sticky paddles on it. And you put it on muscle, and it uses a 9-volt battery, and you can control the stimulation. It's the exact stimulation that we use on dogs.
Exactly.
It's almost exactly the same. And it's used in physical therapy to, you know, to, I don't know what exactly it does to the muscle, but you're stimming the muscle with electricity.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And, I have one for my back and my knee.
I was about to say my lower back. I use one for my lower back on a semi-regular basis.
It's like a deep tissue massage.
Yeah. Have you ever touched that with your fingers?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's weird, man. Yeah. It is weird.
Yeah.
It feels so different on, you know, and that's the same thing too. That stimulation feels different on different parts of your body.
Right.
Now, do you use e-collars on different positions? Do you use them on different positions on your dogs besides the neck?
So, I tell people all the time that, you know, any position basically based on the 1/3 behind the ear and down by the muscle will give you a different stimulation than the throat. Yeah. And the continuity, like you were talking about, the continuity between both probes, if it's sitting dead center on the top of the neck, you might get a very, very inconsistent. If not, you'll maybe get like maybe 8 out of 10 corrections that'll actually go.
Sure.
So, yeah. But But you're right. You know, that's the thing with the TENS machine. It's got to have a continuity based on one solid muscle. So if you are on two separate muscles, it won't. You'll only feel a burn. You won't feel the actual muscle jar, which is, yeah. So that's, you know, that's the, yeah, I want my dog to feel the pressure of me actually, like, grabbing, not shocking him. You know, I want to feel that, the muscle jar, you know, and, Yeah. So that's, definitely the positioning does make a big difference. In fact, I've actually taken collars and I've put some of the collars that'll handle multiple dogs, and I'll put, you know, it depends on like mostly on my labs or chessies, and when I'm doing a blind retrieve in the water at a great distance, I'll throw one on left and one on right, and I'll, and then just tap right and the dog goes right. It's like almost like a remote control. It's not a remote control. I want folks to know that. That's a big thing. But
well, it's a point of contact, and you've taught, if you feel it over here, do this. If you feel it over here, do that.
Right.
We use flank collars. You know, we teach dogs to blow using a flank collar, which is a collar wrapped around their belly. And it's a, you know, it's a very effective thing. But if you've never seen it before, it throws people a little bit.
Right.
And so you know, you can get a different reaction by very light stimulation in different parts of the dog's body. And I've never done the left right, but I've seen it done before. I know some guys that train bomb dogs that do that.
Right.
And they train, you know, at great distances, you know, getting dogs to go, you know, to go left, go right. And they've done it before using, you know, remote training collars.
Yeah. I've seen some crazy, like, military bomb dog kind of collars, harnesses with huge satellite devices on the back. It's amazing. Yeah. $20,000-$30,000 for that thing. I wish I could afford that. Oh man. Well, yeah, no, I wanted to also mention to people that, you know, when it comes down, one big question is, you know, dogs with allergies like German Shepherds and stuff like that. And you know, the contact points are usually a high quality stainless steel, but all stainless steel contains nickel, and everybody's got a sensitivity to nickel, some more than others. But Garmin, I just saw on one of their collars, is using a conductive plastic. It's
yeah. Have you not seen those yet?
Oh, it's incredible. It's incredible. Yeah. That's no irritation whatsoever. No hypertrophic scarring, no infections. I'm like, wow. It's just the technology is amazing. I'll tell you, it just gets better.
Yeah. We've seen a couple of different. So Dogtra's had a version, Radio Systems has had a flexible, point that was kind of rubber.
Wow.
And we've got the ones that Garmin is selling right now. They're a little bit, they're rounded. And so the stimulation feels a little bit different. We're using them. I'm using them right now. One of the things that we love to use them for, is bark collars. You got dogs that are notorious barkers and have to wear a bark collar. We sell a pro bark collar right now that you can use those on. And so the biggest thing that it defeats is the pressure necrosis, which, you know, when we were talking earlier about collars burning people,
right,
burning dogs. And basically those, if you ever see a dog that has a neck wound from wearing a collar, it's from wearing that collar for too long.
Right.
And you end up getting pressure on the neck, similar to like a bed sore, you know, and that's just contact pressure. And it's from having this thing pressing up against the neck. You know, you have to have skin contact for an e-collar to work. And the plastic probes, we don't see the pressure necrosis issues. We have some dogs, and I've had a few, that are incredibly sensitive to it, whether it's allergies or they're just sensitive to it. Right. So any dog that's wearing a remote trainer on a regular basis, you know, it's got to come off of them. They can't wear it 24 hours a day. It's got to come off of them, you know, 8 to 12 hours is kind of the maximum. For dogs that are going longer than that, you know, we want to change the position. But the most important thing is you've got to look at your dog's neck, you know, daily.
Right.
Go, okay, do we have any issues here?
Absolutely.
But the plastic probes, you know, pretty much eliminate that. Now, the stimulation does feel different, and I expect we're going to see some improvements over time in that particular technology. But it is really, basically, we generally get a little lower. The stimulation feels a little bit lower when you're using the plastic probes. But that's, I expect that to kind of even out over time. But the kind of same thing happens there. If you were to go from using stainless steel probes on a Garmin collar and you switch to the plastic, you just need to kind of start over on your stimulation choices and figure out where your dog, you know, how your dog reacts to it.
Right. I mean,
but all that said, they're really cool.
Yeah. It looks amazing. I gotta order some from you. I gotta get a new, I think
they will work on your, you've got an Alpha. Yeah. They'll work on that TT15 collar. They'll work on there.
Awesome. Yeah. I got two TT15s, one for the lab, one for the, Bracco. And then I got a TT10 for the pointer because he's so small. He's not small. He's 55 pounds.
But you got a mini.
The mini. Yes. Yeah. The smaller version. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I need to order.
There was a TT10, but that's an older unit. The TT15 come in a regular and a mini.
Okay. All right. So then I got to order
the minis. The minis actually the same size as a normal Garmin Pro collar.
Okay.
And so, it's a smaller unit. You can get away with, doesn't quite have the range is pretty much similar, but the battery life is the biggest difference. It doesn't have the battery life that the bigger collar has.
Okay. All right. That's. I like the smaller on the smaller dogs, just a little less bulky, big antenna on it. But, you know, just to touch really quick on that, the bark collars you were mentioning, you know, a lot of people, oh, that's cruel, this and that. I'm like, no, the technology is so improved that it actually gives dogs the opportunity for a natural bark.
Yeah.
You know, it just stops nuisance barking.
Yeah. So a lot of the collars that we sell today have what's called rising stimulation, in that you can set it where it's going to stim on an incredibly low level, and then it's going to, you know, if the dog continues to bark, it's going to raise the stimulation level. Once the dog stops barking and is stopped for a period of time, then it's going to drop that stimulation back down, you know, and start over. So if you have a dog that occasionally, you know, there's some fine lines in there where you have dogs that, you know, you want them to bark in certain situations, but you don't want nuisance barking.
Right.
And, you know, and you can, that's a tricky needle to thread sometimes. but, you know, it is one of those things. I'm a little, you know, bark collars are one of those things for me that I'm a little torn on. I use them. I won't hesitate to use them. I sell a lot of them. They serve a great purpose. The biggest thing about it, though, is that people need to look at why their dog is barking.
Right.
And make sure that they're either usually a dog that's barking, especially nuisance barking, is missing something.
Right.
And usually it's physical activity. That's generally what they're, you know, what they're missing. And so they're just amped up and nervous, and they, you know, and if you would get them a lot more physical activity, you know, a tired dog is a good dog is kind of the phrase that gets thrown around a bunch, and it's very true.
Right.
And so, you know, so that's the key thing. But what I like about bark collars, you know, bark collars can take dogs that are nuisance barkers and stop them. And some dogs get cured, you know, from their, their barking problem. My experience is that most of them don't.
Right.
You know, they're barkers. Excuse me. And what I like about a bark collar is it gives me control over the barking.
Right. Well,
because, you know, if they're going to bark and I'm okay with them barking, it's not a problem. But if we're staying at a hotel and the dog's in the truck, I can't have him, or if the dog's in the room.
Yeah.
And I can't, you know, and he's in his crate and I'm going to dinner. You know, I can't have him barking. So bark collar allows me to, you know, to stop that. So they're great. They're great tools. Once again, it's a tool. Got to use it properly.
Yeah. I actually wrote a section about that in my book about understanding like the issues, you know, like bark collars are great. I've used them for like people who are like, I'm going to get evicted from my house. And I'm like, all right, that's it. Let's use it. You know, and, but it's no supplement for proper training and figuring out what that problem is.
That's
and especially like you were just saying, that great example, if you're staying in a hotel or something, you know, the dog is unfamiliar with the environment. And when people walk by, the strange sounds, you know, we know the cause, and there's no point in training that out because you're only going to be there a couple days. So, you know, it's like, so throw the bar collar on, get them comfortable, and they'll settle.
And, you know, the other side of it is that if I'm in a situation where I'm staying in a hotel and I want my dog in there, I don't necessarily not want him, you know,
right,
to bark when there's something going on, you exactly know, but I want control over that.
Right.
And so when I get back to the room, I'll take that bark collar off.
Right.
And that way, if I have a problem, you know, I mean, that's part of his job,
right,
at least for certain dogs.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. It's true. Well, one of my best protection dogs, I'll tell you, I've had a Doberman Pinscher. He was amazing. That's back in the day when I was actually still training Schutzen. My Labrador, he doesn't bark unless there's a reason. Like if he barks in the middle of the night,
sure,
I'm jumping up and grabbing something and running out that front door.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
See what's going on.
Exactly. Exactly. And then course, my Bronco, if he barks in the middle of the night, he probably just wants a drink of water. And I,
sure,
demanding. Exactly. But yeah. But this was great, Steve. Thank you so much. Yeah. You know, and to all my listeners, you know, go to gundogsupply.com. I mean, they've got literally, Steve's got everything you need there. Crates, collar, everything you need there. That's something I got to talk to you about too after the show. Yeah. I got to get some crates. I like those Rufflin ones or the
sure.
Yeah, those are nice. Yeah. But definitely,
there's a lot of new ones out there. There's some pretty neat stuff.
Really? Yeah, lightweight, durable, just something that I could, you know, take off the truck and throw in the field.
Oh, that's a whole nother. We could talk for hours on crates.
Let's do it. It's a
complex issue.
Let's do it.
Set it up.
Yep, let's do it. Yeah. People ask all the time about crates and sizing and
sure.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's do that. We'll do that as a future one.
Okay.
But thanks again, brother. Thank you so much. I really, really, really
glad
appreciate
to do it.
No, it was great.
All righty. Thank you.
A lot of information. All right, Steve, I'll talk to you later.
We appreciate it.
All right, bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening to the Pack Animal Podcast. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have any questions or would like to suggest a topic for a future episode or would like to be a guest on the show, please feel free to send us an email to david@thepackanimalpodcast.com. And when you have a moment, definitely check out our websites, steadywinddog.com, that's steadywinddog.com. And of course, thepackanimalpodcast.com. Also, don't forget to pick up your copy of my new book, Through the Eyes of a Canine, which is now available worldwide on Amazon.com. And as always, be sure to hit like, follow, and subscribe to the Pack Animal Podcast on your favorite podcast hosting app. Until next time, remember, it does not matter how much time you spend with the wolf. It's within the capacity of your mind to open and become the wolf.